The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Jason Sherlock is with us. He has done Jail, his autobiography with Damien Lawler. Jason, thank you very much for joining us. You know, there's one thing that immediately strikes me, having gone through it. Did it all happen too early for you, too young? Superstar, 1995 at the age of 19.
It's hard to say that, Matt, but it certainly came very quickly, and it happened all at once. When you think of it, to be involved with Dublin from an 18-year-old and winning an All-Ireland in your first year at 19 and all the rest that was there, did I have the kind of maturity or the skills to understand it? Were there the support networks back then to kind of mind me a bit? Probably not, but at the same time, I think that adds to my experiences, and I'd like to think it's a good snapshot in the book of probably the highs, but there's also a lot of lows during that time as
I'm
well.
Not sure any young fellow would have been able to handle the hysteria that there was about you at the time. I mean, there have been 19-year-olds who've won All-Irelands before and since. I mean, I can think of somebody like Jimmy Barry Murphy down in Cork as well, who was a hero back in 73 when he won the football team. But the 95, the media had changed, and there was this enormous thing about you at the time. Any young fellow would have had his head turned by it.
Yeah, well, I suppose the most modern example, I think, would be Shane O'Donnell a few years ago when he won the...
Back in 2013 with Clare,
yeah, where he came from nowhere, and then there was this kind of curiosity about where he came from and all that. So it was probably something similar to that.
Don't think that was as big as what happened with you.
Well, maybe not, but...
He didn't get offered any television deals off the back of it, in fairness,
no,
you know?
But again... When it happened, because I didn't have a typical GA background, I didn't look typically Irish or have a typical GA, big, strong kind of physique, there was that element of curiosity, and there was probably an appeal to a younger generation, which was never the case before.
And it strikes me there was a positive curiosity on the part of a lot of people, but there was also some negative curiosity as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, well, I think what happened in that first year, there was such a wave of positivity and opportunities and all that. But I suppose my motivation to succeed as a sports person definitely waned in the kind of period after 95, and then once the performances didn't improve, the criticism and the negativity kind of creeped in again. So the reason I got into sport was to kind of be accepted, and then once I got to winning an All-Ireland, everything was fine. But as soon as the results went the other way, the criticism kind of crept in again.
Yeah, that thing about being accepted, it's also, there's a great photograph of you playing hurling with Ballyhea down in North Cork as well. For those people who weren't familiar with that, tell them a little bit about it.
Yeah, and it's a really key part of my my story, my sporting story, but also why I love the GA. My Uncle Eddie, he moved to Charleville to the meat factory, Horgan Meats, back in the late 80s for work, and he got involved with the local club, which was Ballyhea, which it's just outside Charleville on the Limerick-Cork border, parish of 1,000 people, and all they played was hurling. There was very little football down there at the time, and I used to go down on my summer holidays. I think my mum used to get me out of Dublin to keep me out of trouble, and I'd literally go down and they'd throw me a hurley, and I would struggle to even hit a ball at the start of the summer. But as you know, in places like that, there's not a whole lot to do, and we would have played a lot of hurling during the days, and eventually then I'd be good enough to play for a couple of teams, and we did okay. They had some really talented players down there. Neely Ronan would have won an All-Ireland for Cork in 99. Yeah. Eamon Morrissey played for Cork, and Chucky O'Connor. They actually got to a senior club final in 95 down in Cork. They were beaten by Sean Oakes' team. So it was great. But I just remember, because I would have been influenced by basketball and that whole kind of rural parish connection.
And what reaction did you get? Because, you know, normally if a dub came down for the summer holidays, there would be comment. But given the dub with your background, what sort of reaction did you get in those years, in the 80s and early 90s?
It was strange, because I think Eddie, who was a bit of a storyteller, he'd built me up to be this hard show off from Finglas, so I kind of, in some ways, I felt I had to live up to that as well. So initially there was a bit of a sounding out period, but ultimately then the Ballyhea lads, once I could play sport, and they just accepted me. obviously playing other kind of rival towns and villages, that was a bit of a struggle, because I suppose whatever about being in Dublin and looking the way I did, certainly that was novel down there. So it did lead to kind of a bit of abuse and all that. But listen, that's just the way it was. And the one thing in Ballyhea, they very much loved me for being able to play on the team. And I certainly remember that with fondness.
As well as the book, the autobiography, J.O., you had a great interview with Paul Kimmage in the Sunday Independent recently. Very struck by the story of you once throwing a brick at a window and breaking a window near your home because you were getting effectively racial abuse as a child.
Yeah, and again, it's just looking back at it, and there were things that I remembered. So again, when I grew up, like all children, we're all curious and we're inquisitive about how people are and what way they look. And I looked different. I had a father that was from Hong Kong. So that led to some positive, just inquisitive people, but it also led to kind of people that were slagging as well, like kids are all over the country. So again, in those days, I didn't realise that they were wrong. I didn't know that they were wrong to be slagging me about how I looked. So it meant then that I used to fight fire with fire, because I couldn't understand why I was being slagged. So again, I would have been known on the sports field to have a bit of a temper, and it wouldn't have taken a whole lot to set me off. And again, that was a story. I remember the lad slagging me, singing a song that was out. That was the bane of my life. Japanese boy at the time. And out of a fit of rage, I just threw the brick at a window and ran into the house. And again, I knew I was sitting there, I could hear the knock at the door. I knew Brian, my uncle, was going to be called over to inspect the window, and I knew what was going to happen when I came back. But again, I didn't know that I could have told them that they were wrong, because I just felt that I was lashing out because I had a temper.
And did you have many more experiences like that throughout your life? Has it gone on even into adulthood?
It would have even playing at senior level in the kind of early 90s. Like I remember playing a League of Ireland match, and the manager at the time, it was against Waterford, he was an English guy, and literally just racially abused me for the whole game, and no one doing anything about it. I remember playing a senior club game, a challenge game for Dublin, and one of their subs just slagging me for the whole game racially. So again, as much as my childhood was obviously
how did you react to that? Did that actually put you off on the pitch? Did it affect your concentration and discipline?
Yeah, it would have upset me. It would have made me angry. But I think why I'm keen to talk out about it, and why I've spoken out about racial issues over the last number of years, is because now I know what's right and wrong. It wasn't right, and I don't expect anyone in this country to have to accept that. And I think it's important that as much as we've improved in terms of our awareness and our knowledge about the multicultural society we live in, it's certainly not perfect. And I think it's important from my point of view that I speak out and I assist the likes of Lee Chin and Aaron Cunningham that
have spoken. Has it happened in recent years? I mean, have you been aware? Obviously you haven't been playing for Dublin since 2011, but have you actually been aware of that type of thing happening, or are we more enlightened in how we actually now respect each other in our society?
We're getting better, there's no question, but you only have to listen to the likes, and that's why I supported the likes of Lee Chin and Aaron Cunningham over the recent years, where they've expressed their experiences, and I've no doubt it goes on, and some of it is a lack of knowledge, it's pure ignorance, but at the same time that doesn't make it acceptable. So I think it is important that we continue to kind of ensure that people are more informed and understand what's right or wrong.
How difficult, coming back to the Gaelic football, how difficult was it, the fact that 1995 you win your first, and as it turned out to be, only All-Ireland as a player? Now you have been involved in recent years in the Dublin backroom team in the last 3 years, but to go through the rest of your career without winning another All-Ireland, what did that do to your head as you went through your career?
It was a big challenge. And like all sports people, when you're in the midst of things, you judge yourself on success and failure. And certainly there was a period when I finished playing with Dublin, because I was dropped from Dublin in 2009. It certainly wasn't on my terms. Still felt I had something to offer. And as you say, I played in my first season, won an All-Ireland. And for the next 14, I didn't get to an All-Ireland final. So the only way I could see it was failure. I couldn't see any other.
But it was a collective team failure. As a player, did you become a better player after 1995, or was that the peak of your powers?
Well, I look back at it, there was definitely a couple of years post 95 where my focus changed because I was happy to be accepted. I think that's why I was motivated to do so well in a load of sports. And once I got that acceptance, I was happy with it. When results kind of changed and when my form dipped, then the negativity and the criticism came in. And then I realised I had to refocus on my sport because that's what I was passionate about. So kind of from about the late 90s, I'd like to think that every day I was improving as a player. That was my mindset. And I always felt the day I would stop was the day that I felt I couldn't improve.
Yeah, but that blistering pace that eye for goal, which characterised 95, when you were, a sensation, particularly the semi-final against Cork as well. Did you feel that there were days that you played after that, which maybe Dublin didn't even win, or you did win but it was lesser occasions, where you were the player you wanted to be?
Yeah, well, I think my game developed. I think I was very fortunate in 95 that I was playing with a team that were very close. They were on the cusp of winning an All-Ireland in the early 90s, and like my impact in the games were very minimal. I was involved in kind of key scores, but my impact on the game was very minimal. I think my skill set improved an awful lot over the years in terms of my pass and my kicking, my mindset. So I always felt I became a better player. I became a better player for my teammates, and I think that's something that I believe is how good you can make your teammates. So I definitely felt, although I changed my game, I believed I became a better player as the years went on.
Yeah, but hang on, you say about helping your teammates, is it not all about winning?
Good question. And in some ways it is. When you're in the midst of it, you can see it that way. And like, I look at what we did, particularly in, let's say, Pillar Caffrey's years in the noughties when Senan was playing as well, Senan Connell. Like, there wasn't a whole lot different what we're doing now than we did then. We certainly tried things and we tried to become better. Yeah, there were things that we probably, in hindsight, wouldn't do, or we'd do them differently. But again, just because we weren't successful, that doesn't mean everything was wrong.
Now, Dublin, of course, have won 5 of the last 7 All-Irelands and look utterly dominant. What's it like to be part of a Dublin team that isn't winning when you have the expectation of the fans?
Well, it's very humbling and very grounding when you do have this dominance. But again, to put it into context, I won my first Leinster title at 1995. It took me another 7 years to win another Leinster title. So you put 7 years on anyone's career, that's a long time. So yeah, as much as it's great at the moment, it was very difficult. And again, it wasn't from the lack of trying. When I look back at it, yeah, I definitely developed my resilience and my character, because every year we came back, yeah, there was a month or two where you buried your head in the sand and you hope the world will swallow you up. But then you came back and you wanted to improve individually, and you wanted to improve as a team and as a group. And I'd like to think we tried that every year.
How did you cope with being effectively dumped by Pat Gilroy?
I struggled with it. There was a number of years where I questioned why I bothered for that number of years, because I felt I'd given so much. And obviously, I know you don't get what you deserve in sport, but it was just a tough pill to swallow. And a key kind of intervention in my life was the Gaelic Players Association. I had a chat with Desi Farrell and Siobhan, who were involved at the time, and they kind of put me in touch with DCU, who they were doing a master's a scholarship with the GPA, and I did an MBA. And that was a key kind of part of my story, because I was able to reflect back and I was able to take some of the traits that I used in my sport, and I could see how they could have value in other parts of life.
Because a lot of players struggle on retirement, don't they? They struggle for the routine that they've had in the training, getting ready for matches. They struggle the loss of the adrenaline buzz that you get of being out on the pitch for a big match.
Yeah, well, I think anyone that reads it who's played sport, they'll identify. Unfortunately, we have a lot more down days than we do good days. So again, you'll get a sense of how I dealt with it. And at the time, I measured my career on what I won versus what I lost, and I thought I was a failure. But it was only after reflecting back, I see so many more positive things from my sporting career. The fact that I was willing to commit every year, to keep trying, the fact that I didn't give up, I think they're things that I'll be able to bring with me.
And friendships.
Absolutely, yeah. I was lucky, I had a launch there recently, and to see the number of people coming from Ballyhay to like 6 generations of Dublin footballers, people coming from sporting and non-sporting backgrounds, I think that's ultimately the measure of success in terms of your sporting contribution.
Couple of things to finish though, Jason Sherlock, here on The Last Word on Today FM today. Soccer, And you were in Ireland under 21 international. Does any part of you ever think back, would you have been better off doing what Kevin Moran did, having won your All-Ireland medal, heading off and playing professional football in England?
Well, I speak about in the book, if there was a sliding doors moment or a moment where, what if, I spoke to Kevin. Kevin was looking after me during that 95 time because it was bedlam, to be honest. And I met Kevin in the hotel bar the night we won the All-Ireland in 95. And I say it in the book, if, and I'm not saying he could have, but if Kevin had said to me, there's your ticket for Anfield, off you go in the morning, who knows how it could have worked out. But unfortunately for me, even though I was 19, that was the only time in my sporting career I could have done, because the next couple of years, definitely my sporting motivation waned. So that's my what if story. But the way things have worked out over the last number of years, particularly from a sporting point of view and a family point of view, I wouldn't have changed it anyway.
And just a final thing, and this is not sporting related, and this, I suppose, one of the more sensitive parts in the book, also the death of your father, which would have taken place around that time, who was a man you didn't really know that well, was he?
No. He wasn't with my mum in a relationship when I was born. He moved out of the country when I was very young for work reasons, and he had his own family in South Africa. And again, around that time, I got a call from his brother, my uncle, to tell me he'd been coming home from work, he'd been burgled and he'd been murdered. And it was very upsetting for my uncle Martin. From my own point of view, it was tough to kind of take on board because I hadn't really got that connection with him.
So you
father.
Have to process, this is your father who's died, but yet he's the father I don't really know.
Exactly.
So how are you supposed to feel in a situation like that?
And I didn't know how to feel, and it's probably something since I've had children, I probably look at it a bit differently. His parents are in the country, his brothers and sisters in the country, and I lost connection over those years with them. But now I look at it, and I'm sure no matter how I felt, they just saw me as their grandson or their nephew.
Did you ever re-establish connections with them?
I've been in kind of minimal contact, but certainly going through this process, it's something that I'm keen to do, and I've already made contact with one of his sisters, so that's a positive. And again, I'd like to think that a lot of people might identify with certain challenges I've had in the book, and I suppose one of those is that connection piece, that sometimes we don't do enough to connect with people, both in our family or in day-to-day life, and it's amazing the power that connection can have.
Jason Sherlock, thank you very much for joining us. J.O. is the autobiography, which is available in the bookshops now.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.